Certainly good to see everyone out, despite the rain and stuff out there, but of course we need the rain and everything. If you follow along in your Bibles this morning, we're going to be using Luke 21 as our text here. Guarding your heart is an important theme in the Bible, something we need to be careful about. We need to have a watchful eye on our heart, and we need to, of course, watch ourselves as we go through life. If you're in chapter Luke 21, starting in verse 25, now this particular passage here is generally used to talk about Jesus' second coming, but it also has some warnings here that I want us to pay attention to. And there will be signs in sun and moon and stars, and upon the earth dismay among nations, and perplexity at the roaring of the sea and the waves, men fainting from fear and expectation of things which are coming upon the world, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. But when these things begin to take place, straighten up and lift your heads, because your redemption is drawing nigh. Now, Jesus goes in verse 29 to a parable about being watchful. But in verse 34, we'll skip over that. Verse 34 reads, "Be on guard that your hearts may not be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and the worries of life, and that day come on you suddenly like a trap. For it will come upon all those who dwell on the face of all the earth. But keep on the alert at all times, praying in order that you may strengthen have strength to escape all these things that are about to take place and to stand before the Son of Man." In our gospel reading, Jesus tells us to watch ourselves, to watch our hearts, to watch the things that affect us. Have you ever tried to watch yourself? It's kind of hard to do. The only way to really do it is to kind of look in a mirror. Then you can see how you look. This gives you quite a different perspective, though. Of course, we can't watch ourselves with a mirror carried around us all the time. And a mirror is not really watching ourselves. Remember, a reflection is kind of a turned around reflection of who we are. Left is right and right is left. So we don't really get to see ourselves. But he tells us to watch ourselves in our hearts. What we really need is a mirror that'll let us see our hearts. Sometimes a mirror can be found in a person of a friend, a husband, a wife, or some acquaintance. These can be an accurate reflector of the things that are going on with us if we're unsure of how our walk and how our heart is going. It's a good place to start our discovery of ourselves. But the rewards of having someone like that in your life is tremendous. To have someone that we could trust to tell us how our walk in life is and the things we need to do better. First off, he tells us we need to be sensitive to the condition of our hearts. In 21:24 of the book of Luke, it says, "Be on guard so that your hearts will not be weighed down with dissipation and drunkenness and the worries of life, that day will not come suddenly to you like a trap." When Jesus asks us to guard ourselves, lest our hearts be coarsened or hardened, he is talking about the quality of our hearts as far as sensitivity and insensitivity goes. The hard heart is a heart that has lost its sensitivity to others. It cares only for itself. It doesn't care for others. It no longer feels the pains and problems of others. That kind of heart is close to others and their problems. It is closely guarded, and whenever it senses that someone else's pain or trouble is near, it tightens up. It shuts the door. It won't let anyone in. It tells itself that it can't afford to be sensitive to the suffering and worries of others. But Christ calls us to be that. Jesus is quite aware that our hearts have always need to be open and sensitive to others. If we are to love as he has asked us to love, loving requires sensitivity. We have to be open to others. We can't shut our eyes or have blinders like a horse that shuts out the world from us. We have to be able to see the agony of those around us, those who are suffering, because they're the ones that most need God in their lives. I know seeing pain in others causes us to feel that pain, and it's uncomfortable to feel that pain. And it causes distress within each and every one of us if we see that. But if we open up our hearts, we may be able to help others to remove their pain. You know, President Calvin Coolidge went to church, and afterward he was asked by a friend what the minister spoke on. He preached on sin, he said. The friend asked, well, what did the preacher say about sin? And Calvin Coolidge thought for a second there and said, he said he's against it. So we need to pay attention to what's going on around us and what we're learning from sermons and apply it in our lives. We can't just go to church. We have to be one with church. You want to use some of those fancy New Age terms. We have to be able to really open up our hearts to what's happening here and what's happening out there. Now Jesus goes on to tell us that there are three things that can harden our hearts: debauchery, drunkenness, and the cares of life. Debauchery is the extreme indulgence of our appetites, giving license to everything we do. And that's not just talking about the really sinful things that people give into and participate in, but anything in life, like gluttony, things like that. You know, there are some car collectors out there with hundreds of antique cars in there. You know, that they really need to have that much in their lives. Those type things. Debauchery can take many forms, and in many forms can seem innocent to people. But they swallow up our time and our resources and the things in our lives. It can include lust and gluttony, among other things, that we normally picture debauchery. But they can include these other things. A person is caught up in debauchery when the goal in life is to satisfy their physical cravings. When they set out to, I'm going to amass this or do that or anything like that, and it consumes their life. Now, everyone has collections of things. Everything collects things. But the real question here to ask, how does that, you know, affect your life? Do you still have a church life? Do you still worship God? Do you still do those things? That's not to say that every collection is a bad thing. That's not to say that God with 100-something cars is a bad thing. The bad thing is he's devoted his life to that with no regard for God and God's people. That's his life. That's the way he lives it. Each new car or thing he accumulates, he takes great pleasure in it. It's the source of his pleasure in life. Not God, not fellowship with saints, not those type of things. So just having a collection of things is not a condemnation of that collection. It depends on how we live our life with those things. Many people can do a lot of things without letting it interfere with their Christian life. But many people are consumed by those things that they love, and they have no church life. But how did the cares of life get into this list? And Jesus said the cares of this life is one thing that we shouldn't let ourselves be taken away from and let it take Christ away from us. It seems out of place, after all. It certainly can't be sinful to worry about the things we need to worry about in life. We do need to take care of ourselves and our families. We all need food and clothing and shelter over our heads, especially on a day like today. Well, that's true enough. But when we are concerned about nothing else, well, again, when we have closed ourselves off from that, then we have taken ourselves out of that realm. And that's kind of, I guess, the danger of it. Because it may not be evil to indulge in certain things, to amass certain things, and to collect certain things. But when that's the only focus of our life, and it takes us away from God and God's people and the needs of God's people, then that's wrong. We should care about ourselves. We should care about our families. We should take care of our families. But when that consumes us, when the only thing we can do is go out there and 7 days a week make money and try to make money and amass wealth so that we can feel secure with our wealth and not necessarily what God will give us or take care of us with, that's when it becomes wrong. So we walk that fine line. And each and every day, we have to examine ourselves and say, am I doing right? Am I letting this take too much away from me? And the thing is, only you can answer that. Only I can answer that in my life. Because we know what's in our hearts and we know how much time we're devoting to Christ, to the church, and those type of things. And we know what takes us away. So these are questions we have to answer for ourselves. Now we can look at the person who never graces the steps of the church, never comes, never does anything for the church, and goes along in their ways, and we can say, well, yeah, that person obviously does. But in that fine line, in that fine walk, what's most important to us in life? Now, all three of these things that we mentioned can harden our hearts because all three of them close ourselves off from others. They become our life. They become our circle. Nothing else around us. Any one of these can turn us inwards. We become preoccupied with ourselves. When we seek pleasure in the extreme through over and indulging in eating or drinking or buying things, we find ourselves in a very small world. And in that world, there's only room for one person, ourselves. So we need to draw ourselves away from those activities, if that's consuming us, in order that we might be able to have a little bit, a peek over the head, so to speak, of what's going on around us. We must always be ready if our time here on earth is over. That is why we are urged to watch ourselves carefully. You know, we look out there and there's a whole industry out there cranking out books and talking about the end of the world and how all the events in the Middle East and everything like that is coming together according to their view of the book of Revelation, that, oh, it's all coming to an end. It's going to end soon and Jesus is going to be here soon. You know, people have said that for centuries and centuries and centuries, and we're still waiting. We don't know when that time will come, and probably we're all going to go individually to meet God, not in one great end. And we don't know. Maybe tomorrow could be one great end. But we know that each day we must be vigilant and watch that we're not torn away from God by the things of this world so that we miss out on heaven. A sensitive heart will be ready to receive Christ when He comes. It has been said that one of the greatest tragedies of our modern civilization is that you can live a trivial life and get away with it. That is one of the greatest dangers of closing ourselves off to others, is that we live that way. We end up being concerned only with trivial things. But God gave us a great calling, a great task, to educate ourselves and bring ourselves up, and then to look around to others and see if we can help them. You know, and that's some of the things we're trying to do now with our mailing thing that we're doing, is to try to reach out to others and help them. Lastly, we need to examine our hearts. And for that, I'd like you to turn to 1 Thessalonians 3:11, if you're following along. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 11, "Now may our God and Father Himself and Jesus, Lord, direct our way to you. And may the Lord cause you to increase and abound in love for one another and for all people, just as we do for you, so that He may establish your hearts without blame and holiness before God and Father at the coming of our Lord Jesus with all His saints." Interesting that we read this, and that's how He tells us to build ourselves up. That's how He tells us to grow our hearts. Now, we all know that an enlarged heart is not a good thing, an enlarged physical heart. But that heart that we say beats down inside of us, that is really our heart and soul, that can grow also. And we're given the opportunity each day to grow it. And we need to look for those opportunities. You know, a substitute preacher for a small Texas congregation came in early one Sunday, and he was preaching a sermon to that congregation. He was a traveling preacher, and he had been going to this church for a few months while they didn't have a preacher, you know, to help them out. And then he would leave for lunch afterwards, like many do. Arriving early one Sunday, he sat down at the local donut shop, opened up his Bible, and went over his sermon notes. A man was sitting down the counter from him, and he said, you're a preacher or something? He replied, yes, I preach at the church here in town. He got excited and said, hey, I'm a member of that church. The church was small, and the preacher knew all the regular members. He said, I've been preaching there for about 3 months, and I've never met you there. He looked at the preacher kind of strange and said, I said I was a member of the church. I never said I was fanatical about it. You know, so often we let life dictate to us how we're going to live our life. And to a large part, you know, we're born in a certain area. We have certain education opportunities. We have certain abilities. And yeah, certainly we're kind of dictated to in some respects what we can and can't do in life. But the one thing that we can dictate to our life is how we're going to live with Christ and how we're going to grow with Him. And the one thing we need to be is we need to be fanatics for Him. Paul said, if I be a fool for Christ, then I'm a fool. You know, we live our lives, we only have one opportunity to save our souls. And when we save that soul, ourselves, that should give us the greatest joy in our lives. And I'm sure it did. I'm sure we came out of that baptistry and that was the greatest day of our lives. And we were happy that we made it into the kingdom of God. But then what happens? We go back out into the world because we've got to make a living. We've got a family. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. We have to deal with our friends. We have to deal with our family. And pretty much we get beaten down by the world. We get taken out by the world. Some Christians fall by the wayside because the world gets back in there and says, oh, we'll fix you now. We'll rid you of that God excitement that you got right now. We'll show you how the world is really. And they don't understand that the kingdom is not of this world. That we live in this world, but we don't worship in this world, so to speak. We're not in any kind of national borders. We're not anything like that. But we worship God and love God. So if that light has flickered and gone out, then we need to rekindle that. We need to remember how it was when we first entered that kingdom and grow from there. You know, today is the first day of the rest of your life. I know that's kind of, I'm trying to trite cliche, but it is true. It's a perfect time to have a heart examination, to look at our hearts. The heart that God wishes for us to have is one that is open and welcoming. Is there anyone in our lives whom we continuously shut out? Is there anyone we can say, well, I just don't let them in. I want to keep them hands off. Sometimes it's God and Jesus we're keeping hands off. You know, give me a little bit of religion, but not too close. Do the members of our own families feel that they can come with us with their problems and pains? Are we open to finding Christ in others and helping them to find Christ as we go through life? We need to look and we need to crack that shell that the world puts around us. You know, we don't like to stop and help people on the side of the road because it can be dangerous. We don't like to answer our door because it can be dangerous. We don't like to drive with our doors unlocked because it can be dangerous. There are a lot of dangers out there, and I understand that. But as we live our life cautiously, don't forget that there are those who don't present a danger to us that we might be able to help. So it's kind of, in a sense, the world and its condition that creates that around us. And we need to learn to expand that a little bit. So we might be helpful to others. That we might be open to someone who might be open to the gospel. Who knows what can happen? Did you hear about the man who went to the doctor because he had severe obesity problem? The doctor examined him very carefully and said, I have some good news and some bad news. The good news is that there's not anything wrong with your appetite. The bad news is, according to your weight, you're not as tall as you should be. You know, we can look at things in life and we can slant it the way we want to. But this fellow wasn't going to get any taller if he was going to get healthier. He was going to have to, of course, lose a little weight. But how do we look at our lives today? Are we open and honest with ourselves each and every day? Or do we rationalize, well, I know that's not right, but I do it because of this or that or something like that. Do we just rationalize things away? Or are we open and honest with how we are? And open and honest in how we should be? And open and honest in how we're going to achieve that? How are we going to get closer to that love of God? How are we going to get closer to others by sharing that love? How are we going to get closer and win our salvation if we're engaging in things that take us away from God? Sinful things and also things that you know would come upon us to cause us to fall away from God. Amassing great wealth or amassing great this or that, whatever it is, or consuming great things of this or that. What is the focus of our lives? Who controls our lives? Like Paul said, he buffets his body so that nothing can control him. Nothing can draw him away from God. Are we watchful? Are we watching over our hearts this morning? I hope we are, because again, we never know that day. Just as the Bible said, we never know that day